Now, once upon a time in professional wrestling, it used to matter what the fans thought.
For example, all you parents out there with kids, when your kids misbehave, you give the New Day a call. Yep. The New Day comes over to your house, and we will fight your children!
Now, don't get me wrong. A lot of wrestling sucks. But when it's good, it's fucking great. Wrestling is melodrama. Wrestling is mythology. Wrestling is action. Wrestling is comic books. The only thing wrestling isn't is wrestling.
Who wants to take back professional wrestling?
Welcome, everyone, to episode 166 of your favorite podcast, Around the Ring. I am your host, your Floyd and Savior, your Floyd Johnson. Yeah, I can't even get my own name right. So I am your host, your Floyd and Savior, Floyd Johnson. With me, as always, is my faithful co-host, Ryan the Great Aaron. How you doing, Ryan?
I'm doing all right tonight, sir. I'm doing all right.
This is literally the third time I've recorded this opening. I just a little behind the scenes here. For some reason, Skype kept cutting Ryan's voice out in the middle of conversation. So if it sounds like this might be a little rehearsed, it's because it was, because this is my fourth time through. Tonight, again, I'm trying this again. Little house cleaning. It's getting briefer every time. It's getting more brief. We're not really covering WWE this week. What we're covering is the New Japan show tonight, the Fighting Spirit Unleashed show that was on tonight. We're also covering Ring of Honor, Death Before Dishonor, and we're covering our trip to WrestleMania 3, where we got to do a little promoting, got a little behind-the-scenes look into the wrestling show, and we're going to talk about that. And again, we're recording Sunday nights. Right now it's about 11, so the show is going to be up in the morning because of all the events that we had this week. So let's jump right in while the phone is still recording. So Fighting Spirit Unleashed, to catch you up from the parts we've already covered, Ryan jumped in match 2. I jumped in match 3. Ryan, your grade for the show?
Solid A.
Yes, and I definitely agree. We both agree that it was a solid A. Now, let's go into what we were trying to cover before. How do you feel about the best friend shtick?
It's growing on me. I'm a big fan of Trent Beretta. Chuck E. T., the more I see him, the more he's, I don't know, like, grows on me, I guess. I like Beretta with Rocky Romero a lot better, but I am growing on Chuck E. T., but not a bad tag team, but they're not in one of my favorites either.
All right, yeah, that's exactly how I feel. Chuck E. T. has grown on me as Chuck Taylor. I like him more when he does the commentary than when he actually wrestles, but his style of wrestling, the entertaining, the funny style, it's great. I loved it. I mean, it breaks it up, definitely. He's like a first match. He would be a first match guy for me. And, like, if I was running the WWE, he's definitely good for some comedy. And then he can go. He doesn't look bad when wrestling. In this match, in the 6-man match, did it feel like Chris Sabin was just there?
Yeah, he was just kind of there.
Yeah, it was like, let's highlight Flip, let's highlight Jeff, let's highlight their best friends. But Goto and Saban got caught in the shuffle until the Saban and Goto face off at the end of the show. But I mean, at the end of the match. But other than that, it was just like, are you even there? Jeff Cobb hits his amazing finisher, the Tour of the Islands, on Chuck E. T. to get the pin. Yeah, again, one of the other recordings we were discussing how awesome this finisher was. It's like a reverse power slam. It's like a power slam going the other way. And I was just making the point that there's a lot of points of failure in that. What do you think of the move?
Yeah, it looks great. And when he does it, I've been watching him on Ring of Honor here lately when he's come in on their little best of prospect tournament, and he came in and made his presence known and all that stuff, and it looks just vicious. Like, it looks devastating.
So, actually, the New Japan show spoiled something from the ROH tapings.
It did. I had already seen it, so it didn't really spoil it for me tonight, but I know there's going to be a lot of people out there that aren't real happy about it, but that's the way it goes, I guess.
Yeah, so if you're listening to the show and you don't want to get spoiled, skip about 3 minutes ahead just to be safe. But Jeff Cobb is your new ROH television champion. He beat Punishmar Martinez, apparently, at the TV tapings. I saw it this morning because, let's be honest, I don't watch ROH's weekly television show. I pretty much just watch their pay-per-views and, you know, the stories they get told on Being the Elite. I just don't have time, and I really don't consistently know when they come on. How about you?
I do watch it on a week-to-week. I have my DVR set up to record any ROH show that comes on. So I usually watch one and delete about 12 a week, but from all the different channels they're on. But it was actually spoiled for me on his girlfriend, friend of the show, Desi Dorada's Instagram account.
She put it on there?
Yeah.
Okay. I was exhausted from last night, so I was at work actually just trying to make it through the day. So I did not, like, look on a lot, like, anything other than, like, Facebook. I didn't even look on Twitter.
Gotcha.
Yeah, some people had tagged me and stuff on Twitter. I didn't even look at it. And apparently, you know, stuff went, like, conversations went on about a show we went to last night that we'll discuss later. And it was just, I honestly wasn't aware of it until about 8 o'clock. And apparently it's been going on all day. So, yeah, I was kind of in my NFL bubble today until the New Japan show. So, next, well, like I said, we're just going to try to go through the highlights because anything's really significant. Do you think they're going to – okay, so Zack Sabre, Lance Archer, and Davey Boy Smith wrestled Sonata, Evil, and Naito. The reason I bring this up, not going through the match, is Zack Sabre Jr. ends up pinning Evil – and they really pay up the fact that Evil can't beat Zack Sabre Jr. Do you have any idea where you think this might be going?
I have no idea. Like, when it right after it happened, I thought it was going to lead to something more like Naito or Sonata and Naito, kind of like, what the crap was Evil? Maybe he was going to get out of LIJ. But no, I really don't have the slightest idea where this is going.
Yeah, I completely agree. Yeah, it just seems weird because I've heard Evil, they were building up a few with Evil and Chris Jericho. And now they get looks like they're going Evil and Zack Sabre Jr., which they're kind of both the number twos in their, well, the respective groups. I mean, I would say Evil's number two to Naito. I know some people would say Sonata is. But Zack Sabre Jr. is definitely the number two of Suzuki Gun. So them going at each other is kind of, it kind of makes sense in that point. So maybe they're trying to build a feud there. Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Then we're looking at, we had Jay White. And honestly, we end up going in order to a point. Because each of them, it's leading to something. Jay White and Gato pin Kushida. Jay White pins Tanahashi with the Blade Runner after Gato hits Tanahashi in the face with the brass knuckles. Not really talking about the match. The match was the match. What I'm talking about is it looks like they're setting up Tanahashi versus Jay White. Do you think we're going to get that at King of Pro Wrestling for the briefcase?
I hope so. I'm turned into a huge fan of Jay White. Like, I think this guy is going to be a top five heel in the world in no time.
Man, yeah, I was on him. I dig the Switchblade character. I dig the whole only looking out for him type thing. It's just, I think that's kind of lost. And he's a true heel in New Japan. I mean, you got, like, you got Minoru Suzuki, who's a heel, but when his music comes on, everybody's singing along and cheering him, right? And then right. you have like Suzuki Gun. Everybody, they pop when they beat up the Young Lions. And it's just like, but you don't have any true heel. Jay White is the true despicable heel. And now with Gato are the true despicable heels of New Japan.
Yeah, and Gato's going to be... Gato kind of put Okada over the top. He helped get Okada to the top, and Okada's ring work speaks for itself. But he had Gato there as that little side piece that helped him out and did what a manager's supposed to do. And I think he's going to do the same thing for Switchblade. I don't think he'll get that elevated like Okada. He's not going to be one of the best ever. But right now, I think Gato's going to help Switchblade rise to the top of the mountain.
His in-ring work in Ring of Honor, like his stuff with Adam Page when he was on Excursion, was amazing. So I'm hoping, you know, he's going to get time to work. And he does have to play the heel gimmick. That's a big part of it. But when they see he just works a pure match, he's probably, I wouldn't say one of the best in the world. I don't really know yet. But I think he has the potential to be that.
Right.
So next match, again leading into King of Pro Wrestling, that's why we're covering it, is Will Ospreay versus Marty Scurll for the semifinals to become the IWGP Junior Heavyweight Championship match. Me personally, this was match of the night.
I agree.
I thought this was well worked. I don't know how you feel. I like Will Ospreay's flippy shit when he's working with a grounded wrestler. Like, when he works with Kushida and, like, Marty Scurll, I really like his flippy shit.
Well, people listening that listen to this show quite a bit, they know I'm not a fan of the flippy shit. The first thing I wrote down after this match was over was 4.75 stars, 4.75 stars. This match was excellent. Marty and Will Ospreay have chemistry unlike no other. Just, they work. It, and it's brilliant, and it's poetry in motion every time they're on screen together.
Yeah, how he got in the, I'm talking about, it wasn't like a suplex, like it was a reversal into a chicken wing. I can't even describe it. I'm generally good at saying, this is what he did and this is how he got in the chicken wing. I can't even describe it, but it was a thing of beauty. Like, I felt like that should have been the finish.
Oh, yeah, if that would have been the finish, I still would have had no complaints. And we got, 3 to 5 minutes after that of great in-ring work. But that spot in the match, I'm like you, I can't explain it, but it was just a thing of beauty. And there's going to be GIFs, whatever you want to call it, and short videos up on Twitter and Facebook, if they're not already, in no time about that reversal.
Yeah, we were listening to Brian Pillman Jr. on the Chris Jericho show on the way back from our show, and he was talking about how he was going to go through tapes and name every move. I want to send him that move and say, name that transition into that, because I don't even know what the hell that was, and I've been watching wrestling longer than he's been alive.
Right. So,
and I still couldn't name that transition. And of course, I'm not in the business, but it'd be funny. It would be cool to see what he comes up with as far as a name for it. But I love that they went back to an old story trope. You know, it's like there's only three things guaranteed in life: death, taxes, and Marty beats Will. And in this case, Marty went back to beating Will's. Will has still only beat Marty the one time straight up. And that's kind of awesome that they stick with that storyline. You know, it's like through Progress, through I'm thinking Rev Pro, through all the different companies they work together, Will Ospreay loses to Marty Scurll. And in New Japan, Will Ospreay at the beginning of this year took his took his rightful place as the on the throne as the king of the juniors. And he actually surpassed Marty. And it was like, and then he lost his belt. And then there's been months. And it's kind of cool that they went back to the villains being having his number.
Yeah, it's been an ongoing story from everywhere they've wrestled. It carries over into Ring of Honor when they wrestle there. And it just, when they're working the story, when they're working together, the chemistry in the ring, and then you could watch those two, you could watch their match, put it on mute, no commentary, and it's going to tell a brilliant story. You don't even need the commentators to tell their story. That's how good they are together in the ring.
Yeah, they reverse so much. You know, they reverse so many moves. And it's just kind of, that's kind of cool that that's how they do it. So, now, the next match is the IWGP Tag Team match. It wasn't booked as the main event, but a lot of people would have considered it the main event because the main storyline was the Bullet Club Elite versus the OGs. That was a big storyline. And I actually think that this match and the next match should have been reversed. But I imagine since the main event was a tag match, they didn't want two tag matches ending in the show. So,
right.
So I'm looking on New Japan, right? And I don't know if you clearly remember the ending. Tonga Loa pinned Matt with Ape Shit, right?
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
So on, and I don't know if they did this on purpose, this is on accident, I'm not screenshotting or anything, I'm not trying to break news, but it has Tama Tonga beating Matt Jackson with a heel shot. Is that how that happened?
Huh.
Did they do the finisher to win the match?
I mean, they did they did the finisher.
Okay. All right. Yeah, because I thought Ape Shit won it, but he might have kicked out of Ape Shit. And I was going to say that would have been funny because I thought they were editing it where they didn't have to write Ape Shit on there, on their results. No, but Tonga and Loa, it was a really well-told story. Like, anybody that tells me that the Young Bucks don't use psychology, I don't think they understand what psychology is because they went back to the back injury.
Yeah.
And you know, Matt's back hurting, and they played it up, you know, like really, he sold it really, really well. And it was like, and then Kevin Kelly did a good job of saying that sometimes his back just spasms up. And JR actually drove that home really well, too. I thought was a well improved commentary. I don't know. It went from absolute shit to okay. It went from absolute.
Yeah, he was average tonight. Yeah.
Yeah, and you know what? When you're absolute shit, average is amazing. He actually seemed like he did his homework and he knew what he was talking about. He didn't mix up any names from the part of the show that I was watching to the end. I mean, did you notice anything?
The only thing, and I felt like he was pronouncing Tama Tonga's first name wrong. I thought he was saying like Tama.
Yeah.
Or Tama. That was the only thing, but he knew who people were. He flowed well with Kevin Kelly.
Yeah. So I think this should be the permanent team because you have the really knowledgeable New Japan guy, and then you have the guy that's just coming in for a familiar voice. I'm not saying Barnett should be fired. Maybe go a three-man booth. I don't know. I actually dig Josh Barnett. If you ask me who I like more, Josh Barnett or JR, I would go Josh Barnett. And I would dig if Kevin Kelly and Josh Barnett did the show. I just don't like the Jim Ross and Josh Barnett because neither one of them pay attention enough to the product.
Yeah, that's very true. One of the reasons I was like so happy when I switched over to Dish Network was because I got Access TV, and I watched the first three episodes of New Japan that I could. and I only watch it now for the specials or if, like, one of the old matches pop up that I haven't seen. That's the only time I watch it because I just can't do their commentary.
Yeah, it's just like I said, it's like watching, it's like going to watch an NFL football. It's like we're going to watch this game, but the two people commentating only watch the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and now they're covering, like, Pittsburgh and Arizona. Like, it's still football, and they know some of the main players' names, but they don't have the intimate relationship with the team that I want when I'm hearing commentating.
Yeah, no, I agree completely. But it was he did better tonight, and at the end of this match, we got new IWGP heavyweight champions, and I'm curious where they go next with this when the rematch is. I'm hoping it's at the Tokyo Dome, but I don't know if they'll wait that long to do it.
Yeah, and they had we will recruit you shirts on, which I actually think is leading to something. You'll hear more about it at the end of the at the end of this review. So next match, we have Juice Robinson, Juice against the American Nightmare, Cody Rhodes. So in this match, it's funny because I'm a big Cody fan, and pretty much in every company other than New Japan, Cody is a face.
Right.
In New Japan, he's a heel, and he plays heel, and he works heel, and it's hilarious. So he's doing all the heel tropes in this move, in this match. He's scratching the eyes. He's Brandy's pulling him out of the ring so he doesn't get pinned. Fucking Juice kicked out of Den's fire.
Yeah.
Was he the first one to do that, or did he? I think he hit it on Omega, and he kicked out.
Yeah, I think Omega kicked out of it.
But, yeah, a lot of people have kicked out of Den's fire. So I thought that was cool. I just think Juice is just a really, really good worker.
Yeah, Juice is a good worker with – I enjoy his personality, but he doesn't seem like somebody that's going to be able to get over to the I can't even say, like, casual fan, because a lot of hardcore fans, it seems like just he's like a guy that's there, but he's really good. I enjoy his work, and he's always puts on a good match. It's just I don't think he's that guy that can carry a brand or a division.
Yeah, I could definitely agree with that. I think storyline is going to have to help him along. So, like, right. in this match, before the show, which I didn't get to really cover, I kind of thought he was going to end up joining with the OGs. Because as much as his gimmick is over, I feel like there's a ceiling to it. And I feel like getting with the OGs and having kind of an army behind him would have helped him develop that edge that he needs to win more. Like, not
that
win.
Yeah,
not win more as in, I'm talking about where they would want to push him more. It's like he would have more notoriety where they want to push him more. It's like he's in this match with Cody, and it's no question who the biggest star is. Cody is an A-lister. Juice is a B-lister in Japan. In America, he's probably a C-lister.
Yeah.
So I think
your casual fan won't know who he is.
Yeah, I think he should work in America more. I think he should. I think I am all about Don Callis booking him for Impact Wrestling. I think he could find a spot. He could get more eyes on him, and he could become a bigger name in the company. It's the fact that he only works in New Japan, and he loses a lot.
Yeah.
So maybe he goes on a little American excursion to to find himself. Well, in this match, Cody hits Den's fire, tries to puts Juice in the corner. Juice puts him on the top ropes. Struggle. He hits a superplex, beautiful superplex. Cody then hooks his leg. 1, 2, 3. Your winner and new New Japan United States champion is Cody Rhodes. What did you think about this?
I was actually, I want to say I was shocked, but I wasn't, because you want that belt on somebody that works in America, in my opinion. And not only that, Cody is the number one guy this year over the, especially the United States, probably in the world, though. He goes everywhere. He wrestles everywhere. And it gives that belt a name. Juice is good, but he's not somebody that you could say, oh, yeah, he's this champion. They're like, oh, okay, that's cool. But you say it's Cody, people are going to be more inclined to probably go watch his matches, watch that show, and things like that if they know Cody is wrestling on there, and especially if he's got a title.
So, from what I understand, Cody and the Bucks are the ROH six-man champions, right?
Yes.
Cody is the NWA champion. And now Cody is the New Japan United States champion. He literally holds belts in three companies right now.
Three big name companies.
I mean, as far as the indies, probably as big as you get. I mean,
yeah.
Being the U.S. champion is a big thing. It's thing as far as New Japan, because I think he's the fourth champion. So it's a very young title. They wanted someone that could draw in America, and they probably wanted to put a belt on someone from the club, Bullet Club. They wanted to put that belt on someone from the Bullet Club. So now when he goes on the Jericho Cruise, he shows up to the NWA show. He has both of those belts with him. ROH is happy because he has two belts, right? And he doesn't have to tie up any ROH titles. They can go. Yeah. It looks like they want to do Matt Taven versus Jay Lethal. That's the feud they're going to. And it's not like Cody's in the background, because Cody has two other belts.
Right.
So it's like, we don't have to tie up our belt with you. So that's kind of awesome. And so Cody pulls off the win. Everybody gets excited. Everybody pancake. I can see him in 21 days. I hope he brings the belt with him. I know that sometimes New Japan does like to keep their titles in Japan. So if that's the case, that's fine with me. But I know some people might be upset. They'll get over it. And the last match on the card was your main event, the Golden Lovers, Kota Ibushi and Kenny Omega versus Tomohiro Ishii and Okada. I thought this was a very exciting match, but I felt like they could have cut about 10 minutes off the match.
Yeah, it was good. I understand this being the main event because it's got Okada, Omega, and Ibushi in it, but this was probably my fourth or fifth favorite match on the show. It was good, and it had the main event guys in it, but there was just so many matches before them that were better, in my opinion.
Yes, I definitely agree. I just think if they wanted a better match, they could have went faster paced and kept it about 10 minutes. If they would have done what basically the Bucks and Bucks did at All In, I would have been great. Just a spot fest, and then the Omegas hit their Omega and Ibushi hit their golden trigger and call it a day. Because, I mean, the match was good, but the announcement after the match was the point of this match.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
So after the match, all the elite show up in the ring. So it's Marty, Adam Page, the Bucks, Kenny Omega, Kota Ibushi. Cody's not at the ring. Kenny Omega thanks everybody, basically points out that they weren't packed, which I like that. Very open. We weren't packed. But he's like, we got a lot of, smiles on faces. A lot of people seem happy. And he says, the fans want Kota versus Kenny. We had our 10-year promise for the singles match. Basically, it seemed like he was leading to announcing Kenny versus Kota at King of Pro Wrestling. As he's about to announce it, Cody Rhodes comes down to the ring with both his belts. He kind of hangs outside, and Kenny calls him in. He's like, you know what? I can solve your problem. I know you have a problem. He's like, let's do Kota Ibushi versus Cody Rhodes versus Kenny Omega for the IWGP Championship in a triple threat match. Kenny points out rightfully that the IWGP title hasn't been defended in a triple threat match in a very long time. I don't remember exactly how long. It's been years, and I think it's only been done once. So he says it's about the beauty of professional wrestling, that they're all still friends and they're all still in one group. What do you think about this?
I think it adds another level of excitement. It'll get more U.S. fans to watch the show, I think. So for a draw, it adds to it. For match and match quality, I don't know what it's going to do. I think Cody's going to end up beating the pin. But it's going to be entertaining. It's going to be exciting to see what story they tell during the match. But I'm looking forward to it, and that's going to be a stacked show.
Yeah, and I completely agree with you. I'm looking forward to it. I am actually, it was one of those things that it was like one of the matches that I was like, oh, I'll just wait until the morning. I will just wait until the morning to get the match or whatever because I like to sleep sometimes. Not very often, but I do like to sleep. So I was like, oh, I'll just watch it when I get up. Nope, I will be up at 3:00 in the morning watching that match because I like want to know exactly when it happens. You know, I want to know who wins. And I think this is going to be, and I've said this before, when that first time that the Gorillas of Destiny came in, I think that it was meant for Cody to join them. But with All In coming up, I don't think they wanted All In to be about Cody turning on the group. How's Cody going to turn on a group and then be put on a show together, right?
Right.
Yeah, all right. So I think they basically paused Cody turning on the group until after All In. So now I truly believe what we're going to get is at this show, triple threat match, it's all going down, they're wrestling, and Cody joins up with the Gorillas of Destiny. I don't know if he wins the title. I don't think he wins the title, because I mean, they do have other big shows before then, so they could do like a short Cody title reign and Kenny win it right back. But I do think Cody joins the Gorillas of Destiny. I think he joins the Bullet Club OGs.
Interesting, interesting.
His personality is more Bullet Club OGs than Bullet Club Elite.
No, that is very true, and that's 100% true. I don't know. I think the person that's going to join the firing squad, because they've been very open that they're looking for somebody. I don't know if they're looking for more than one person or just one person, but they need somebody to go with Tama and Tonga and Haku and Bone Crusher. But I don't know who it's going to be. I would love for it to, and Foley, obviously, I would love for it to be somebody that's maybe been in the Bullet Club before and left. I don't know who that could be, because I don't know contracts, and there's been a lot of members of the Bullet Club in the past before we started watching. But I don't know. I don't really want to see Cody join them. I mean, heel Cody is the best Cody, so it would be good, but I just don't know if that's something I want to see right now. I don't want to see the Cody-Kenny feud again and all that. I want to hold off on that.
Yeah, it's just, I think the OGs need a true leader. And if you go based on how the Bullet Club works, it's always basically, you know, a Gaijin leader. And you're looking at Finn, then he gave it up to AJ, then he gave it up to Kenny. I think Cody, as far as, and they play those over-the-top heel characters, Cody was the natural leader. So I don't know.
Now you make good points. You make good points. I don't know if I want to see it just yet.
Yeah, and the thing is, I think it's something they would stretch out if they were sure all of them were going to stay. That's why I think they're going to rush it, because you got January 4th and you don't know what you have after that.
Yeah.
So that's what sucks. It's like, I think they may actually rush it because they don't know where Cody and everyone's going to sign. Because I believe his contract with ROH actually ends December 31st. And then I think all of them are booked for, all of them are going to be booked for Wrestle Kingdom. And then
right. That's
when Cody, Cody will go after that. So I think they might have to rush a storyline that they normally would be holding out on. Because they don't know. Now, I'm not predicting Cody does anything. I'm just saying, if I'm a company and I know someone has a chance that they leave, I'm pretty much either going to get what I can out of them or book them down as quickly as possible.
Yeah, I can see where you're coming from, and I can see the points you're making. We'll see.
Yes, so that's going to be at the King of Pro Wrestling. It'll be next Monday, October 8th, I think it's called Sumo Hall, because it's called like Ryogoku Kukugukin. I don't know. I think they just call it Sumo Hall. And it's next Monday in Central Time, it's 2 a.m. You can convert from there. The only matches that we have are that triple threat match and Kushida versus Marty Scurll. That's what we have for the junior championship. But those are two solid matches right there. You have to guess that the Guerrillas of Destiny are going to defend their tag team titles. There's going to be some stuff going down. It's going to be a big show. It's going to be a great show. I'm looking forward to the main event, truly. It's just funny to me that they put the U.S. title on Cody, right? And then put him in a title match. So to ensure that the U.S. title will not be defended. So that's kind of weird. That's kind of weird. All right. So, it's getting late. So we're going to go ahead and move on. We're going to move on to Ring of Honor's Death Before Dishonor 2018. It was live from Las Vegas, Nevada. You watched it live. I watched it this morning. What did you give it as far as a grade? A to F.
On an A to F scale, I gave it a C plus, B minus, somewhere in there.
Yeah, I thought it was a good C plus. I can honestly say I didn't watch it live, so it did take a little bit from it. But there was just a few results I don't like for the future of Ring of Honor. And that's really what I'm looking at. It's just, I think they paint themselves in the corner. So when they do that, it makes it where they get these slow periods of time. So we started off with Kenny King versus Jushin Thunder Liger. I know how much you love Jushin Thunder Liger. How much did you like this match?
I enjoyed it. It didn't end the way I expected it to end. And Kenny King trying to go on heel, and he ended up beating Hot Liger. I love Liger. It was just a match. It wasn't bad. It wasn't great. It was a solid match that it felt like it was rushed. It didn't seem like they had really any time, but Yeah, so, I mean, it was just kind of there. This match is probably a solid C.
All right. I kind of agreed. I like the whole idea of Kenny the King saying, "Thank you, Austin. You've taught me something." That I thought, I like continuity and storyline, so I like that they brought that back.
That he taught him
that you have to be willing to do anything you can to win. So that was cool. Then the next match, we got the Briscoes versus the Addiction, or AKA SCU, and it was Christopher Daniels and Frankie Kazarian. Now, let me ask, did you find it weird that it was Frankie and Christopher Daniels when it was Scorpio and Frankie who got the win over the Briscoes at All In?
Kind of, but it didn't really, I mean, it wasn't one of those things. I was like, oh, why are they doing it this way? Because Kazarian and Daniels are always the guys that are together for tag team title matches. So I didn't think nothing of it, but, I mean, it is kind of like, when you mention it, it makes sense what you're saying.
I do know that on the storyline right now, is that Kazarian and Christopher Daniels' contracts are not going to be renewed at the end of the year by Ring of Honor. Right. So to get their contracts renewed, they have to be champions, because champions get their contracts automatically renewed. So this was one of their attempts to become a champion before December. So in that way, I see it being Christopher Daniels and Frankie Kazarian, because if you're booking a show, Scorpio Sky's job is not going to be in jeopardy. He's like in his prime. But these two old guys, yeah, I could see their jobs being in jeopardy. It's kind of what's going on in the NFL right now. So, you know, like with Earl Thomas. They're like, hey, we're not going to give you a new contract because you're old. You're getting older, you know, before a new contract. And he's like, oh. So it's like people getting pushed out like that. People telling them they're not good enough. And everybody can relate to that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, so we got to that situation in this match. Let's see. How did they win? I don't even remember. I remember them. Oh,
basically,
yeah.
What happened,
yeah,
Darian got his head busted open on the outside fairly early in the match, and it was just a beat down of Daniels the whole match. Like, this felt like it was something that, oh, crap, he got hurt, and we got to change course real quick. And they did, and it just ended up being the Briscoes retain over Christopher Daniels, basically.
Yeah,
almost a handicap match.
Yeah, they pinned it up, hitting a J-driller on Christopher Daniels for the win. Yeah, the Briscoes won. They are the greatest tag team in Ring of Honor history. If they ever do a Ring of Honor Hall of Fame, they should be the first two members, because they never left. So,
yeah.
That's kind of awesome. Next match, not a fan of the outcome. Sumi Sakai versus Tennille Dashwood. I'm going to let you give your thoughts first.
All right, honestly, I only half watched this match. I'm not a fan of Sumi Sakai. But I wasn't a big fan, really. I mean, she was kind of there, and then when we saw her at the ROH show we went to earlier this year, just her walking by and seeing her up at the commentary table, just that brief minute of walking by her, I became less of a fan. And then the fact that this, in my opinion, fragile-looking, basically almost grandma, can put Tennille Dashwood in a submission move and cause her to black out where the ref stops it. I don't buy it. I don't understand it. I don't get it. I don't know where they're going. Unless they just don't think Tennille is going to be there very long, or they don't trust any of the other women they have. I don't know. I mean, they're treating the Women of Honor like, you gave them a title, and that was awesome. Where, yes, they're finally getting the title they deserve. and it's put on Sumi Sakai as like a thank you, like a participation trophy that you've been here and you've done this and you've done that, but it's doing nothing for the Women of Honor in the grand scheme of things, because people don't talk about Sumi Sakai. It's not doing anything for the division, in my opinion. I mean, I know on this you agree with me, but Shanelle Dashwood, I mean, hell, there's, I don't know who else is in there off the top of my head, but
I know Madison Rain just signed. That was it.
Yeah, she just signed, and she's getting up there too, but yeah, I don't know. I wish they would do a better job with the Women of Honor division and keeping it relevant and making it to where it's something that people want to see and all that. But yeah, that's really all I got to say about it.
I can sum up what Ryan just said in very short words. The wrestling is a cosmetic business, and she is not cosmetically pleasing. She is short. She doesn't look tough. There's nothing about her that makes me think I want to watch her wrestle. And I'm not talking about, like, attraction. I'm talking about, like, she's the James Ellsworth of women. That's
see,
about
I don't even think that. What, like, when I see her, and I don't mean this in the way, like, a super negative way. Like, you remember when Moolah and Mae Young were doing their thing in the Attitude Era?
Yeah.
She, in person, like, standing next to her while we're walking down the aisle at the Ring of Honor show and walking through the lobby, she's very similar to how they looked.
Yeah, and that's what I meant. You think about James Ellsworth. He has no muscle tone, no definition. He doesn't look like he could beat anybody up. Right?
Right.
So you don't want to watch him wrestle, right?
Right.
Other than doing comedy crap. That's what I'm saying about Sumi Sakai. She has no muscle tone. She doesn't look tough. She doesn't really have an angry face. There's like nothing badass about her.
Yeah, she just looks old and fragile.
Yeah. I like me, I would hire Jordynne Grace. I would hire Jordynne Grace, and I'd have her come in and squash her in like a minute.
That would be awesome.
That's what I would do. If that's what I would do. If I was ROH, I would hire Jordynne Grace. Big Mama Pump would come, and she, you know, she'd come out like a special challenge, just completely destroy Sumi Sakai, and then put her on top of the ROH division. I think it would make more sense and have someone that people might know. She's big in the intergender wrestling world. She's like Black Label Pros champion. She's done a lot, you know, and it would, to me, it would bring a little more respectability to the Women of Honor. Cause right now I don't have any. It's just kind of annoying to me.
Yeah. I mean, this is, in a lot of their shows, the Women of Honor is the Facebook Live show before the main show.
So it was kind of cool that this got to be on the main show.
Yes.
But, and it looks like Brandy's working again, so maybe she can bring some more eyes to the division, because I knew when she was competing in the division, people care more. Even if
Yeah, she gives them something to talk about.
Punishment Martinez. He was in a match with Chris Sabin. On the Sumi Sakai Tennille Dashwood, I actually watched the match. I gave the match a solid B. I thought it was a really good match. It was a really well-worked match. Like I said, I might not be able to stand Sumi Sakai, but the match was worked really, really well. And if you just, I know you don't like looking, really, but if you want to watch an actually well-worked match, which hasn't happened a lot in Ring of Honor, this was a really well-worked match. I do want to.
Okay. I'll probably go back and watch it again then, with you saying that. I mean, I only half paid attention to it because I had some other things I was trying to do as well on a Friday night, but things had to get done. But I'll probably go back and watch it.
Yes, yeah, so then we had Punishment Martinez versus Chris Sabin for the Ring of Honor television title. Martinez pretty much, I mean, Chris Sabin gave a good effort, but Martinez won, wins with his choke slam. And after the match, he tries to do a stomp where he put Chris Sabin through a ladder, and Jeff Cobb came down to the ring that looks like he was going to challenge it.
That was a good confrontation. Punishment hit Jeff Cobb with a chair, and it had no effect on Jeff Cobb whatsoever. When he turned around, Punishment, that's the first time I've seen Punishment with a look of, like, I don't know what to do.
Yeah, and that was really awesome as far as that that him no selling a chair shot from Punishment Martinez. I mean, Jeff Cobb, when you look at him, he's no someone that can no sell a chair shot if he wanted to. Because he's a big dude. I'm like, dude, he's just big, and it's kind of awesome. Flip Gordon and Cole Cabana versus Bully Ray and Silas Young in the tables match. What did you think of this match?
I mean, it made Flip look really strong.
It did.
Like, Colt Cabana got eliminated early, and then it was Silas Young and Bully versus Flip, basically, for most of the match. It made Flip look strong because he took a beating, and he came back, and he technically eliminated them both, but the rest had got knocked out, and they ended up attacking Flip and laid him over a table. When the ref woke up, he just saw Flip laying on the table. So Bully and Silas Young got the win.
Yeah, I definitely I didn't like the ending because it was to me too, a little too tropey. Flip got cheated. I would have liked it to come down towards the end with Flip, and then he got put through a table because, you know, the sheer beating that he had taken from those two men. But I like that good thing that the bad guys did win, per se, because that's what needed to happen in this situation.
Right.
So then we got a 5-on-5 Bullet Club versus Chaos match. I honestly don't care about these matches. Marty taps out Rocky Romero with a chicken wing. I mean, I feel like I've seen this match in New Japan.
Yeah. The big thing from this match, Nick Aldis on commentary announces that at the NWA show that Floyd's going to be at, Aldis and Cody is going to be a 2 out of 3 falls match.
Yeah, and that's the best part. That was the best thing that came out of this. Aldis and Cody, 2 out of 3 fall match. Aldis did a really, really good job on commentary in this match. He pointed out a lot of the inconsistencies with the reffing and the match, and he said Cody paid off the refs and the people around. And honestly, if you're just looking at it in kayfabe, he was being honest. He was like, Cody gets knocked out on the outside of the ring. Instead of counting the 10 and giving Nick the match, he throws up the X and buys Cody some time, basically.
Yeah, and also, on top of that, like, he's talking, he's dogging it, and then I forget who it was. I think it was Caprice Coleman that said, we're here to talk about the match. And Nick Aldis just goes in, and he starts calling the spots one by one by one. He's going to have a career in commentary if he wants it when he's done.
Definitely. Very well-spoken guy. I think he had a good job, in this and building up their match. Again, their match seems like a big deal, which is what it always should be. Last match was the main event, Jay Lethal versus Will Ospreay. I thought this was a really well-worked match. I had it right at 4 stars, but you knew who was winning, didn't you? Did you ever have any doubts who was going to win the match?
I did not.
Yeah, Will Ospreay is a New Japan contracted wrestler. He wrestles in England. Jay Lethal is the guy that's going to show up to work every day. So I figured Jay Lethal was going to win. He hits the Lethal Interjection for the pin in a very entertaining match. Post-match, Vinny Marsaglia and TK Orion come attack Jay Lethal. They've been saying most of the night that Taven is in Mexico. And Jonathan Gresham tries to help him out. And Lethal, he gets beat up. Lethal fights back. And Matt Taven runs out and attacks him with a purple world title belt. What, do you know what was up with the purple belt?
I don't. I couldn't tell. They said on commentary that it was an exact replica of the world title.
Okay.
And I heard Taven say, "This is my belt. I'm the world champion, and this will be mine."
So, yeah. So, it looks like that's where they're going with it, is that Matt Taven is going to challenge Jay Lethal for the ROH title. Is Final Battle the next pay-per-view?
I'm not sure.
I don't know what their next pay-per-view is. We will cover it and catch you up, but it looks like that's what the next program is. It's going to be Matt Taven and Jay Lethal. So the final thing we're going to cover on this show, we had a really good time and a really special event to us. I think this was the first event that we kind of met in person, right?
It was the first, I don't know about that, but it was like the first show that we went to and we were kind of there together.
Yeah, the first event that we like talked, I got to meet his son. It was Oklahomania, and it was a couple years ago. Now, let me tell you, it was the Young Bucks when they were starting, they did an appearance. It was when they were starting their rise. And let me tell you, there wasn't a big line. Remember? They got their 10-minute rush, and then you could pretty much stand there and talk to them.
Yeah, me and my son, we stood there and talked to him for about 15 minutes with only one or two people coming up. We didn't buy a photo. We didn't do an autograph because that was before I got into them. But we stood there for 10 minutes and just shot the shit with them.
Yeah, so then there was the Hardys and Sting, all bigger lines. Then
War Machine was there.
Yeah, Moose was there. JR had a bigger line than the Young Bucks. So
Hacksaw Jim Duggan.
Yeah. It was loaded. So this is the year was the pretty much the third anniversary of it. They moved it from a summer show to the fall. So it was Oklahomania 3. It was in Heritage Hall in Ardmore, Oklahoma. We decided to do something different this year. We actually bought a booth at the event so we could actually promote and get our name out there as far as the podcast. We brought some flyers, we got some candy, we had the computer, and we just, you know, we went to the show. So it was a interesting experience for us. Let's start off with this before, I mean, because we're going to talk about the whole show or whatever, but what was your favorite parts of the night?
My favorite parts of the night was just being in there and being in the atmosphere and seeing what it's like. Like, the show was incredible. The show was good. They always put on a solid show when you're there. It's always fun interacting with the wrestlers. But I think my favorite part about this show is, like, with us having the table, when they did their pre-show meeting before the fans came in, we were kind of over to the side with our table and just sitting there minding our own business, and they go into their pre-show meeting. We're not going to talk about really what they said in there because we don't know what is intended to be out there, but it's very interesting and different seeing that side of it and knowing what goes into it before all that.
Yeah, and it's just like you seeing them being regular people. They're kissing each other's kids, catching up. That part is just... that's just really cool, that really cool part of it. And it's funny, we're standing there, nobody knows who we are, and no one really, you know, bothered us. It was like we sat and we minded our business. A couple of people came up and said hi, you know, and that was cool. We got to see some wrestlers come in as far as the show. And that was really cool to get the kind of backstage look. And let me first, and I do want to kind of address something today. Oglemania 3 had a poster out. It had wrestlers on the poster that unfortunately weren't able to make it to the show. Like, since we were kind of in the backstage, we literally saw when he was getting the news that some people weren't going to be there. So,
yeah,
that's what I'm like. It was kind of a lot of those information, a lot of information he had was last minute. So there was no time to change the flyers. There was no time to really even make an announcement on the Facebook page because he was too busy getting the show together. So, you know, I'm not making excuses for him. I'm really not. Like I said, if I hadn't seen it happening, seen it going on, I wouldn't speak on it. That's not my job. I'm not with World Class. We are not affiliated with World Class. We're just basically fans that go to the show. We literally paid for a booth. So I'm just saying, it's just that's how we feel. They put on a really, really solid show, and it's a really good time. It's fan interactive. You get a chance. A lot of wrestlers just standing there. You get a chance to talk to them, and it's just an experience that you don't get a lot of other places.
Yeah, and once we review the show, I'm sure we'll go over who we met, who we talked to, who we met, some things that happened that could be big for the show, and things like that.
All right. You kept a better track of the match card than I did on your phone. So, but when we get into the show, so first we start off with the Danny Hodge Battle Royal. So it's announced as a 30-man Battle Royal, which, of course, about six people get out there. And Flex Zerba, I wouldn't even know how to describe his character other than he's like a version of Skip from the Bonnie Donnas. Sonny and Skip from back in the day. He's a workout guy. He's Flex Zerba. And he comes out and says, I didn't come out here for the 30-man Battle Royal. I came out here to get my Oklahomania moment. And he's like, let's do a boot camp. So he challenges them to exercise. And then, as you know, which it was all hilarious. They were doing push-ups. It ended up breaking out into a Battle Royal, but would only be in six-man. Because at one point, everybody's turning around, and Flex just starts trying to eliminate everyone. So one person he wasn't able to eliminate was Lance Archer. Yep, Lance Archer, who was on the Long Beach show tonight. Last night was wrestling in Oklahoma City. That's what you call being a road warrior.
Yeah, last night he was kind of like when Flex Zerba was going through his spill about doing a battle royal or a boot camp. He's like, I'm not having it. Like, he did the push-ups, and then after that, it was like, no, I came here to fight. And kind of like what Floyd said, all the other people started doing some of this stuff. Jim and I, a couple other people were in the show. I don't know their names. They would turn their back, and Zerba eliminated them. And then it came down to Flex Zerba, Lance Hoyt, and one other guy, and they kind of Hoyt went after Zerba, and then at one point they teamed up on Hoyt, and ended up coming down to Lance Hoyt and Zerba, with Lance Hoyt being the winner.
Yeah, and he did the choke slam, and then he threw him out the ring. That was pretty awesome. Lance told us as he walked past us, and I said, you need to bring the sprinkle of black, that his water entrance was banned from New Japan. So that kind of sucks, but I can imagine a lot of fans complaining about it, especially when you didn't come to the arena to get spit on by somebody.
Yeah.
So, or water poured on top of your head. Me, I would have got a kick out of it, but I know a lot of people don't. So a lot of people are germaphobes and stuff like that. That doesn't fall into my purview. Yep, but it was a highly entertaining pay-per-view. I mean, Battle Royal, not pay-per-view. highly entertaining battle royal. What was the next match, sir?
The next match was very entertaining as well. It was Devastation Reborn versus the Step Brothers. And
explain the Step Brothers. Reborn.
I don't know if I can do a good job at explaining the Step Brothers. They are, it's Jermaine and Tego. If you've been to a world class show, formerly IWR, Tego is the Heat Seeker. Montego Sica is what he was known as before. And he's now on a team with Jermaine, who we talked to, and hopefully one day get on the show. And it's very much a comedy team. And Jermaine does like a rap for their intro. It's really funny, very fan interactive. Good. Tego is a great worker. I've seen him in some great matches with people in the past in singles matches that have been at the top of the game in WWE. This guy can work. Jermaine's there. They're good. Devastation Reborn, they were brought to the ring by Al Ferrat, who some of you guys may know. He's had matches, we've been told, with some legendary people in the business. But the match ended up being, Tego ended up pinning Prince Mahali.
Yeah, it was a great match. And to explain, they are the Step Brothers, as in they're not actually brothers, they're just black guys, as in that term, brothers. And they dance, which is the step part of it. And they we got some flossing in this match. We definitely got some grooves. We got Jermaine singing. And Jermaine's a very intelligent, funny dude. We look forward to have him on the show. And it's funny. He was one of those people you talk to, and I didn't want him on the show like to ask him about his wrestling life. I just wanted him on the show to talk wrestling. He was a very entertaining dude.
Yeah, he's a guy that would be fun as all get out to hang out with.
Yeah, definitely. So, yeah, that was a very fun match. What was the next match?
Okay, before I get into the next match, I want to do some build-up to this because there's something that happens during this match that kind of goes back to some stuff before the show starts. So, Floyd and I get there. We're getting out of the car. I grab Floyd's backpack. He grabs the bag of candy that we have for our table, and this guy's out in the parking lot. He's like, "Hey, are you guys wrestlers?" We're like, "Nah, we're just here. We're not wrestlers." He's like, "Okay, if you're wrestlers, I'll pay you for an autograph or something." "No, we're not wrestlers, man. Don't worry about it." So we go in, and then we come in, and this guy, he finds his way back over to our table, and he's like, "Hey, take a picture with me. Sign my paper." I'm like, "Man, we're not wrestlers. We're just here. We just do a podcast." He's like, "I don't care. Sign my picture." So he had a sign in the back of his picture of, I don't know who the wrestler was that he had autographed, but he had us sign the back of it with a whole bunch of other legit wrestlers, former WWE guys, and stuff like that. And then he took a picture with us. It was kind of awkward because we're like, "Dude, we're not." And he was hammered. He was three sheets to the wind, and all that. So back to the match. It was Retro Randy defending his revolutionary title against Damon Windsor. And it ended up being a no DQ match. And Retro Randy is very much an 80s character. And it's awesome. Like, he comes out, he's got a Walkman. I don't know where he found one, but that is awesome. And during this match, they're going back and forth. And this guy that was talking to us before the show, he's hanging over the rail with his phone, and he was trying to get involved, and he did a little bit. So we had security, and they moved him and had him go back to his seat. But Retro Randy ended up winning in a no DQ match against Damon Windsor.
Yeah, what was his move? I don't even remember what his move is. I remember he pinned him. But yeah, it was.
I don't remember that.
It was really distracting because of the drunk guy. And then we got him back in his seat. But yeah, Retro Randy gets the pin. Like I said, I remember having fun with the character Retro Randy, and Damon Windsor does this really cool entrance where he's kind of like this sick cult leader, and he has this woman coming out with bare feet, and then he had this kid in his white dress, and it was just very well put together.
Yes, this is an entrance that, I'm going to be honest, if this entrance had, if it was a bigger company, and it's no disrespect, I mean this in all 100%, I love it. His entrance is phenomenal. If you put this entrance with a company that could, that had the money for some real production to go with it, this would be, I would think, an elite level entrance in the big leagues, in the WWEs, the New Japans, the Impacts, things like that. That's how good this guy's entrance is.
Yeah,
and the way he does the character.
Yeah, he definitely has an artistic eye. If he definitely came up with that entrance, because it definitely makes you want to pay attention. So
he's incredible.
So yeah, Retro Randy gets the pin. What's the next match?
Up next, the match of the night: Fuego del Sol versus the legendary Juventud Guerrera.
Now, when I tell you Juventud Guerrera can still move, this is not me pumping up anybody. I tell when wrestlers are old. I am just known for almost being painfully, almost rude, truthfully. Juventud Guerrera, if that was slowed down, his slow is still faster than half of the wrestlers. He was amazing. I was very happy to get the chance. I'm very happy that I got to knock that off a list of people I've met and people I've seen work. Juventud Guerrera was amazing.
Yeah, like, I'm going to be completely honest. Juventud is a guy that you could throw into New Japan, Ring of Honor, WWE right now, and he could compete at a fast-paced, high level with any of those guys. I mean, he would hold his own still at 45, 46 years old, however old he is, almost 50. He would hold his own with any of them. And he was all over the ring. We got masked Hoovy. We got unmasked Hoovy. We got two Hoovy drivers. It was just an incredible match. Fuego always does a good job with whoever he's working with. Fuego was a guy that I could see put on a little bit of muscle. He's thin, but he can work. He can fly. He's a high flyer. He does a lot of flips. But he's somebody that, if I don't know how old he is, but with some eyes on him, that's a guy that could go some places.
Yeah.
He's a good worker.
He definitely has to gain some weight, but other than that, I think he's amazing. But he did a really good job. He hung move for move with Juventud. That was a good, great find. We got to see the Hoovy driver to finish it. Halfway through the match, he actually unmasked and pretty much worked the rest of the match unmasked, which was so awesome. So, yeah, shout out definitely Juventud Guerrera. Hopefully, you know, we get to see him work again because it was amazing. What was the next match?
All right, after this flashback to earlier in the night, Flex Zerba comes out wrapped up in Ace bandages, cuts a little promo, and he says he's the ruler and the master of world-class revolution. Well, then the music hits, and out comes Sid Vicious. And Flex is like, well, I misspoke. And he ends up getting two choke slams from Sid Vicious.
And that leads us to intermission, where Sid Vicious actually took pictures with fans outside of the ring. And we saw a lot of people line up for that picture. Ryan got the picture with Sid Vicious, which was awesome. He got it by himself before we found out you could bring as many people. So, but shout out to Sid Vicious. You know, you definitely showed up and you seemed like you were giving everybody a good time. That dude just seems like a very happy person. So I definitely like Sid.
Yeah, he was a nice guy, And then at intermission, we also, Floyd got his all-in turnbuckle signed by Glacier, signed by Justin Roberts, and we got our photo taken with Juventud Guerra. And speaking of Glacier, like we were talking earlier, we had some cards and stuff, and right after he signed Floyd's turnbuckle, sort of I was looking for, I said, Floyd, I'm going to try something here. He's like, okay, go for it. So I handed Glacier, because he didn't have a line at this point. He'd finished up the group of people that was there. I handed him one of the cards for the show, and I said, hey, man, we met you at StarCast. He's like, yeah, I remember talking to you guys. Because you were, we talked about being here tonight and that y'all were going to be here. And that was cool that he remembered, he went along and that he remembered us. And I handed him the card and I said, hey man, how much or what would it take to get you on our show? We're just a fan podcast. We would love to talk to you about wrestling and how you came into the sport and all that. He's like, man, you know what? I'd be honored to do it. Do me a favor. After the show, hang out. Meet me back over here by this table, and I'll give you one of our cards. Well, we'll get to the rest of the card later, but after the show, he walked out, gave his bag to the people that were with him. He walked over to talk to me, and because Floyd was over talking to one of the other wrestlers, and he gave me his business card with his name, his phone number, his email, and all that. So if we can make it work schedule-wise, there's a chance we will have Glacier on Around the Ring podcast here in the coming weeks or months.
And just to let you know, like housekeeping, it will probably be something we record and then play later that week. It probably won't be that day, but we will do any time Glacier tells me he's available, we will make ourselves available. And we will just talk, we're going to talk wrestling, ask him about his life. He does a training school, going to ask him about that. Ask him about his relationship with Dusty and how he became a member of the Nightmare family. So those are a lot of things that are going to come up. So I look forward to doing that. I look forward to talking to him. Just talking to him like, you know, like he's a normal dude. But I remember the Blood Runs Cold and the Glacier build was a big part of my teenage years, which I thought it was like younger than that. But my teenage years, I just remember how much we were looking forward to Glacier.
Yeah, so this is something that we're really excited about. And if we can make it work schedule-wise, and if he can make it work schedule-wise, this is definitely something we're looking forward to do and we hope we can make happen.
And I do apologize if you caught me yawning there. I have been up since, like, again, like 7 o'clock this morning with only a few hours of sleep. So if we speed up a little bit through the rest of the show, I do apologize. It's just we definitely wanted to record something for this week because we don't like to miss weeks. So we just hit the intermission. Also, at the intermission, I bought a shirt from Desi Dorada. Actually, it was funny because she didn't really know who we met before, but she didn't know who I was, which is cool. I don't expect everybody to remember everything. But on her Instagram, she had posted a picture of her shirt with her two dogs. And I was like, I was literally one of the first comments. And I was like, are you going to bring a 3X? And I was like, yeah, I messaged you on Instagram and I was asking if you would bring a 3X. And she's like, what's your name? And I was like, Tensi A. She didn't know who I was, which was fine. I'm okay with that. Like I said, they meet hundreds of people. But I ended up buying a shirt from her and we got to talk. Ryan ended up getting a shirt from her. She actually did him a favor and he didn't have any cash. So he PayPal'd her the amount and went ahead and got the t-shirt there. She actually asked me, could she sign her on her t-shirt, which was awesome because, you know, it's a signed shirt by a wrestler and she's freaking amazing. Every time we meet Desi, it's awesome. We got her contact information and we're going to try to get her on the show.
Yeah, I talked to her today because she gave me the shirt last night and about noon today, I sent her the money via PayPal. So she's like, hey, take it. I trust you. I've got your card. I trust you. I know I'll get the money. Just get in touch with me when you can, and I'll give you my PayPal information. So I sent her the money today, and she said, let's podcast. So we're going to try to work it out with her too.
Yeah. So, yeah, we and just a few other people we met. We met a music, a guy that does a lot of the around the ring music. We met him today, and he's probably going to what we're going to do is more than likely send him our bumper music and see what he can do to it, add a little spice to it. You know, it's been the same for quite a bit of time. And then we're going to and then we met the new head of marketing at World Class, and we're going to talk to her, hopefully help get the World Class named out there. It's just everything we did by getting the booth, it was absolutely worth it. It was a once-in-a-lifetime experience. World Class is top-notch and professional, and they treated us really well. Jerry checked on us several times. Just like I said, I know some people might. I'm just gonna say, my experience with World Class has always been A+.
100%. We've been to about a dozen shows over the last 3 to 4 years, and every one of them is incredible atmosphere. It's fun to be at. Jerry, he walks around among the fans. He talks to them. He knows you by the repeat people. He'll know you by name. The company itself is great. And every time we go to a show, we talk about it on this podcast. And we want to do what we can to help Jerry and World Class get to the next level and get where they want to go. So we're hoping we can do that.
Yeah, because I want you to go to any other your indie companies that are working at the level that they have with the stars they have and have the promoter come out and shake your hand, give you a hug, ask how you're doing. I doubt that happens. It might happen more than I think, but I doubt that it happens. But it happens every time we are at work. Every time we were at an IWR show and every time we're at a World Class show, it's always top notch. He takes care of me. He takes care of Ryan. He actually took care of Dave, and they get stuff set up for a festival. So it's just something that if you're interested, you can go to www.worldclassrevolution.com. You can join their Patreon because it's $5 a month. You can watch all the videos of their show. I'm guessing Oklahomania 3 will be up sooner or later. It's just one of those, it'll be later, but it'll be up there. But you can watch videos and everything from World Class Revolution. I am really not trying to shield. I don't talk positive about products I don't like. So understand, the only reason I'm talking about them is because we had a great time. It was fun. And I think everybody there, we saw a 13-year-old kid. I think this was at his first wrestling show. It looks like, he looked like he was about to cry that he was so happy. So that was awesome.
Yeah, it was a great show. We got four more matches left from Oklahomania. And then we'll talk about what happened after the show. But the first match back after intermission was a triple threat women's match with Desi Narada, Lucha Underground, and Impact. Known Taya Valkyrie and former Dollhouse member on TNA Impact, Marty Bell.
Yeah, this was a very solid match. I thought it was Taya Valkyrie's entrance, Desi Dorada, who's our favorite independent women's wrestler. They did a good job as far as the show. What did you like about the match?
I liked the match a lot. I like how it basically it told a story about mainly with Marty trying to get in and get in there, and they like pushed her in, like I think like the top baby face because she kept trying to get in and she'd get knocked out and get back in and get knocked right back out of the ring, but. The chemistry that the three had together was really good. It was a fun match. In the end, I believe Taya got the win. At the end, she ended up pinning Desi with Marty on the outside. fun match. The entrances they were all great. All three of these women were phenomenal. We talked to all of them after the show, and it was great.
All right, so little behind the scenes. I'm getting yelled at to wrap up, so we're going to speed through the last three matches. What was the match after this?
Up next was Coyote. He came out, he cut a promo saying he's been hearing about Glacier all day, and he wants to see Glacier in the ring. So Glacier comes out full character, and they have a match, and Glacier wins with the kick.
Yeah.
And then
Coyote, they shake hands. Glacier and Coyote shake hands. Glacier does his pose, and then they go to the back. Next match was Scott Steiner. Flex Zerber came out to the ring. And what did he say that pissed Scott Steiner off? Like he was the big
bad. He came out in even more bandages on crutches, on a crutch, barely able to walk. And he said something to the effect that he's the big bad booty daddy of the world class. And then out came Scott Steiner. And Scott Steiner said, normally you would have like 33 and a third chance of winning, but seems how tonight you're in bandage and all that. I have 100% chance of winning and you have no chance. And he cut his little math promo that he did in Impact a while back, and the place went nuts. And then Zerber got out of the ring and was trying to walk away. And Scott Steiner said, I know these people want to see me kick your ass. And they fought, and really, Steiner just beat the hell out of him all over the outside of the ring and out in the stands and stuff.
Yeah, and it was kind of a no contest, right?
Yeah, it was just a pure beatdown.
Yeah, because we missed a little part of it because we were on a section where we couldn't sit, and we had an extremely tall person in front of us.
So then
we got to the main event, right?
Yes, now we have the main event. We have Johnny Nitro, Johnny Impact, Johnny Mundo, Johnny Morrison, Boone the Bounty Hunter versus Chavo Guerrero Jr. for the world-class heavyweight title. It started out as like fun competition, just good spirit and all that, and then the match was top-notch solid.
Yeah.
Chavo retained his title, but it was just a really fun match.
Yeah, we got all the things. We got we didn't get a Three Amigos. I'm going to have to talk to Chavo about that.
No, good point. I didn't even think about that.
No, but I think he has a torn bicep or whatever because he had a big arm brace on. But it was a solid match. John and Morrison went through all the names that they call him. Chavo Guerrero went through all the championships and stuff that he's won and how he's an Emmy Award winner. And it was basically a game of one-upsmanship. And it ended up ending with Chavo got Johnny in a La Maestro cradle. And that was the end of the show. They thanked everybody in Oklahoma and Ardmore, and everybody seemed very exciting to be there, and they looked like they had a great time. It was a lot of energy. Some of the wrestlers came out, signed autographs and took pictures after the show. Talked to everybody. We got to talk to Desi a little bit more, and she again was awesome. The whole Glacier thing happened, and then we drove home.
But, yeah, we also got our picture with Ty Valkyrie and Marty Bell.
Yeah, I got my picture with Ty Valkyrie and Marty Bell. They didn't, charge us anything. It was a really good. It was a really good time. I'm just gonna tell you, if you get a chance to go to World Class Wrestling Revolution shows, take that opportunity. Brian, again, I am getting excitingly harried as we move into the month of October now. So I'm just going to say, do you have anything else to say about it?
I do not. I've been up since 6:30 this morning. I got to be up in 4 hours for work. So, yeah, I don't have a whole lot. It was a good weekend of wrestling. I'm looking forward to the next week.
All right. Well, for Ryan, this is Floyd. We had to do our call on, we had to do it on, not on Skype like we normally do. We had to do it with him on the phone. So if the audio is a little off, we definitely apologize. Next week we'll do better because we we'll figure out what our audio issues were this week. So for Ryan and me, I would like to bid you adieu and say life may get you down, but make it through the end of the week by just knowing the fact that it's all a work, and don't forget to kick out at 2. We'll see you next time around the ring.